Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Now, I'm sure we all remember back in 2012 the desperate story of 5-year-old April Jones, who was abducted from near her home in Wales. And local man Mark Bridger was convicted of her brutal murder the following year. And sadly, and more importantly, devastatingly, April's body was never found. And 2.5 years later, April's parents, Carl and Paul Jones, join us now to talk about their profound suffering, which they have documented in their new book in the hope their experience will raise awareness of the issue of child pornography and raise money for missing children's charities. You're both very welcome to the programme and thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It would have been, of course, April's birthday on the 4th of April. Yeah, 8th birthday.
Yeah, it was her 8th birthday, yeah. We just passed it quietly with a couple of friends and family.
Do you suffer more during a day like that, or do you find yourself celebrating a little bit the memory of your daughter?
We do suffer, but every day's different, even on her birthday. Our mother-in-law came down and my nephews came down, Paul's brother and his wife and my son, and that we got some balloons and let them off, and we had some cake at home, like jazz, and us put roses on April's grave.
Yeah. We try to celebrate it rather than a commiseration, yeah, or anything like that. We try and celebrate what we did have, even though it was only a short time. We try and celebrate it.
It was an aberration of nature, the length of time you had with your daughter. The date we need to go to, I suppose, is October the 1st, 2012. And you've had to relive this for people like me and people listening to this programme over and over again. Do you mind me asking you to go back to that date, or is it just a fact of life for you now?
No, you can go back. I mean, it hurts, but people want to know how we get on, what happened.
Yeah.
It was just a normal day. It started out like every other day. We actually did a bit of Christmas shopping over just down the road from us in Aberystwyth. Come back, and April had done really well on her school report, and she'd gone swimming with her friends, and come back, and we let her out for an extra 15 minutes as she shouldn't have done so well, and it just escalated from there.
It was that little time that you said, go on, sure, you've done very well, and it's what any parent would have done for a child who's saying, can I just have one bit more time out to play? You know, you did what any parents who love their daughter would do.
I think most parents would have done the same thing, would sympathise with that, yes.
And then you sent your son Harley to say, go out and get April and get her in time for dinner or what have you.
Yeah, we sent Harley out to go and bring her back, and when he came back with her bike, he was screaming, saying she's been taken, and that's when the nightmare began.
Was he in any position to let you know where she had been taken, or who had taken, or what were the circumstances of the snatching was?
He doesn't know who it was. April's friend was still there on the curb saying that somebody's taken her, and then I rang the police, and that's about the next day, that's how we found out who it was.
April's friend was just over the road and watched the incident happen. We did briefly ask her, but she was quite hysterical herself, so they had police specialists come in and asked her.
Did you both think, Paul and Carl, did you both feel that parental gut instinct that this was not good, or did you feel a more optimistic outcome might be available to you?
When she was taken and all that, we knew sort of from the start it wasn't good, because April goes nowhere without her bike. Her bike's a little transport. Wherever she goes, her bike goes as well. So we knew something was wrong from word go.
You always have hope, yeah? You always have it. You can't just give up, but there was always hope. But come about 10:30 that night, I just had that bizarre feeling that, you know, she wasn't going to come back.
But I didn't. I just thought she was going to come back. You know, someone was going to find her and bring her home.
I can imagine that's exactly where a lot of people would be thinking, come on, there must be something to bring her back. She's too little and too gorgeous to have anything bad happen to her.
That's right, yeah. You just don't think things like this can happen to you. And where we are, it's a very quiet place. We don't get any real trouble or any sort. So something like this to happen is, it's just totally abnormal.
devastated the whole town.
Yeah, and that's what I was watching a documentary that you participated in, and you got the sense that this was a crime the whole town, obviously you felt more than anyone else, but the whole town seemed to feel it, that they all felt this doesn't happen here. This is a good place with good people.
Yeah, I mean, at the time when all loads of people coming out the green where we live, that was full of people. Police had come, outsiders have come from Aberystwyth, Shrewsbury, Newtown, further afield have come down to look for April.
I think our community regards itself a little bit of a loose family. I'm pretty sure in Ireland it's much the same thing.
It is, like, yeah.
They all regard it as a family, and when something so bad happens, they all pull together as a family.
The abduction of April prompted the biggest police search ever undertaken in Britain, as I understand it. Paul, you talk about the first 24 hours as being critical.
That's right, yeah. Well, you know it all on TV, you've seen it on TV, on the papers, everything. It's the first 24 hours, everything happens in the first 24 hours. After that, the scale starts sliding drastically, that you're going to have a good result.
And unfortunately, it didn't end well, as we know. Mark Bridger's name came up early in the investigation, and you weren't his friend by any means, Paul, but you'd known him fairly well.
I've known him, yes. I've known him from previous. We were, at one point, very briefly, I was dating Ace's sister, and he was dating the other sister, so we had paths across. And I do believe we went fishing at one point, but that's about as far as it went.
And the hindsight, of course, what looking back, could you form any class of opinion on him, his behaviour, his personality?
He came over very charming, very nice, a little reckless. He did talk a lot about his army career and bits and pieces, like. But no, I couldn't really form much of an opinion of him.
The friend of April, I think, Amy, was shown a series of photographs of cars, given that April had been abducted in a car. And it was one such car, and a peculiarity, if you like, about the car that made all roads lead to Bridger's house.
Yeah, it was mentioned on the news about a left-hand drive car or vehicle. And then the only person in our town that's got that was Matt Bridger. And as soon as we heard it on telly, we shouted it was Matt Bridger. Then that's when the police sort of sent everybody out to go and get him. And from there, everything came out. What he said he had done to what he hadn't done. And from there, the nightmare just got worse.
Story digressed from there.
Of course. He had six children, as I understand it, to various women.
That's correct. Yeah.
And in fact, both April and Harley would have played with a couple of his children too. This shows how tight this community was that you've been living in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. They all play together.
The man himself, Mark Bridger, you know, as the story unfolded, it became clear that this man was a deviant, essentially.
Yeah, the stories that he's told weren't true.
He lived in a land of his own, I think. I mean, he believed his own lies. I mean, to the point that he was ex-military, SAS, Special Forces and stuff. That lie had been carrying on since he moved from London, which is some 20, 25 years before. And he'd lived that life and believed that lie.
So how were you able to find the difference between his story and what actually happened, what he told the police had happened?
He told the police that he ran April over by accident, and he had picked her body up and put in the car to take her to a hospital or something. But after that, the story sort of changed.
There were so many rumours flying around of what had actually happened, and his story changed so frequently that we only listened to what the police told us that was 100% factually right, which they could prove was right. And that's all we really listened to at the end of the day, because there was rumours every direction going.
Yeah, which of course have no use to you whatsoever. Yeah, you needed facts.
Rumours are devastating. They're almost as bad as the action sometimes.
We need to go to Mark Bridger's house then, because the forensic team got in there pretty swiftly. And what were they able to tell you about that search?
They told us they found an amount of blood on the floor. They found blood specks in the bathroom, by the bath, by the washing machine, and They eventually found bone fragments and skull fragments in the fireplace.
They also found an arsenal of knives because he thought he was some sort of Rambo special forces. And they found a collection of specialist knives and stuff. So there was a rather large puddle of blood just from the fireplace, a couple of feet from the fireplace. So they think that's where he committed his act.
I don't know how to respond to hearing something as gruesome as that. So and April wasn't my daughter. How were you able to percolate that information? How were you able to take it in and take it on board?
It was hard. I mean, when the police told us about the amount of blood, I knew she must have, you know, had one hell of a... What he'd done to her must have been really brutal. I mean, she was only little, 5 years old, and the amount of blood that was on the floor, you knew it wasn't sort of just knocked over. You knew something had happened there on that spot.
And we take all this information in, like, but we always know that we can't actually do anything for April or couldn't do anything for April. So we took all this on board, but now we're in a position that we can try and make a difference for other people.
Your first port of call was obviously Jasmine and Harley, and you had to explain to them the developments that were happening. How, as children themselves at the time, how were they able to, how did they take the news? How did they respond when you told them?
I had to tell Harley, and when I told him, when he, you know, that night, I sat him down upstairs and I told him.
Yeah, he just squealed. I couldn't face him. Like, Coral had to do it.
The scream that
he
happened.
He screamed.
It was so piercing.
It was something you won't forget for the rest of your life. Jasmine surrounded herself with her friends and did a bit of looking and just surrounded herself with friends and stuff.
And she just wouldn't speak about him.
Yeah.
She was really worked up, a mess.
Yeah. But they've both pulled in together. And they're amazing little characters, incredible little characters.
They say children can be resilient, but you're probably looking at them thinking, how are you guys coping, let alone us? And how are you as the parents? I mean, I can hear it in your voice. It sounds as though this could have happened yesterday, and I understand that, I think, or try to understand it. But there's no recovery from something like this, is there?
No. We live from day to day, sometimes hour to hour. I mean, if I have a bad day, Paul sort of picks it up, and then if he has, but I will say Jasmine and Harley, they kept coming, are you okay, Mum? Mm. Asking us questions, and, you know.
They actually turn around and start looking after us.
Do they?
It's quite bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, it is a bit bizarre.
They sound like human comfort blankets.
Yeah, they're absolutely amazing.
So we're away now, and Jasmine's at home looking after her brother for us.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive, but they're impressive. It's certainly looking at Jasmine on the program that you did together. She seems like a pretty impressive young lady, very together, smart, articulate. I mean, you must be quite proud of her as well as Harley. But just watching her, I just thought, well, there's a smart young woman.
We're very proud, both the kids, and Jasmine's got a big head on her shoulders. She's a really strong person. She knows what she wants to do, knows what to say to people.
She's strong-willed and she's very intelligent.
And she'll say what she feels at the time.
Which is healthy.
Pull any punches.
Yeah, which is probably a good thing too. Yeah, I mean, I was struck by something you said, Carl, which was that when you're out and about, and I think a lot of people listening this morning who've had a bereavement of this nature, in the sense that obviously nothing is like what happened to April, but when the natural order of things is distorted, whereby a child dies before a parent, and they feel guilty when they smile, or guilty when they laugh at something, even though it's beyond, they should never have to feel guilty. But why do you say that?
We're going out with the other two children and all that, but I feel guilty because she's not with us.
Yeah, she should have been there enjoying herself with us, having a laugh, smiling, running around. He suddenly catches you and you have that guilty feeling for a moment.
Because I still feel guilty for letting her out.
Do you?
I don't think that's good.
And yeah. And that's not a good thing, but I presume you're in counselling, that you're talking to people.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have counselling and all that, but it's just...
Yeah.
It's still difficult.
You're in desperate pain, Carla, and I don't want to prolong that pain even by talking to you. Are you okay to continue?
Because I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Let me then, if I may, go to the trial of Mark Bridger, because justice had to be done, or at least seen to be done, and you both decided to attend that trial. Why?
I wanted him to know he's not going to get away with anything, and I'm there to make sure. Because when we went to the court the first time, we could sit sort of opposite him. He was in his glass cage and we were opposite him, and I made sure I just stared at him so he knew we were there. But when it came to the court, the first bit, the trial part, we were upstairs right above him.
What did you want him to see in your eyes?
The hatred I had for him, the anger, everything that I could think possible for him taking away my little girl and a little sister to Jazz and Harley and a granddaughter to my appalled parents.
Do you think he comprehended that from looking at you?
No. He's in a world of his own, fantasy land. Whatever the police said to him, he made a different story up for it, kept changing his own story. He was just in his own fantasy world.
Do you know, at one point, I don't even think he knew we were there. He gave us a side glance once, didn't he? A very slight side glance once. And he never looked at us. He never acknowledged us. In fact, he never acknowledged anybody in the court.
We saw this side to him that is important to you in terms of raising awareness about pornographic images of children on his computer. What on the spectrum of paedophiles, what level are we talking about here?
The photos that they had on there were really too disgusting. I mean, you couldn't imagine how a mum or a dad feels when you see a child with an adult and his sex photos and all that with children. You just want to get down there and just...
He had pictures of children in sexual... sexual images then of children on his computer. And he had some 370-80-odd, I'm not quite sure how many, that of these photos. Some of them were cartoon characters with kids in, but some were actual kids in sexual positions with... There's more to that, which I won't even say over
I understand.
Radio. I think it's too much.
Yeah. And yet it's important that we talk about it, broadly speaking at least, because this is a modern scourge that people like Mark Bridger are feeding into their troubled brains, and that can lead to the most awful and ghastly consequences. And that's something that's so important to you, I think, now as a couple and as parents going into the future.
Yeah, because we were told he was looking at those images before he took April's life. So it's a big part of what happened to April. So that's why we want them off the network.
Well, for all children right across the world, the country, we want these images, in this modern day and age, these images shouldn't be uploaded or downloaded. And we would like the internet to at least tell people, the family, that they are trying to do something. But at the moment, we don't hear any information off the internet site saying they are restricting these images, but how they are doing it, or any plans on how to do it. They've just almost ignored us.
I'm not that surprised to hear that, because, as you know, that the internet and these and this world it's like they're down the rabbit hole. It's almost utterly unpleasable.
They almost think they're above the law, I think. Yeah.
And yet you still campaign and try and make more people aware of it. And do you feel sometimes you're just hitting your head off a wall, or do you feel that you can make progress?
Well, sometimes you feel like hitting the wall, but then now and then you hear the government saying something. But it's like, you know, say you're outside now, somebody's picking on you, fighting, and something really happened. That person could get done for not helping you. Well, it's like the internet people allowing all these photos and images to go on the network, but not doing anything about it. They're feeding them their habits that they need. It's just so wrong.
A year after, if we go back to April and her disappearance, a year after her disappearance, you held a funeral for her. That was not easy for so many reasons, but largely, I suppose, because you had very little of April to say goodbye to.
Yeah, we only had some bone fragments and some bits of skull fragments. But we were allowed them bits to have a funeral.
We had four little pieces of bone which they identified as, these are more likely human remains than non-human. That's the only reason we actually got a funeral. And that was from that lady from Milan. Scientist from Milan proved that.
And you went to the to Mark Bridger's cottage. Was that the right thing to do in retrospect? Are you happy that you went to that that awful place?
I'm not happy I went, but I had to go.
Really?
Because you think, you know, you get told of what happened and where, but in your head you've got all these horrible things going on, and I just had to go and put everything in my head in the right place, because you get told different bits, that this bit was somewhere else or this bit was there, but I had to put it in order so I knew. And I, the stuff we saw, like the puddle of blood that was outside where the fire was, you could actually see knife marks in the flooring where the blood was.
To have that place destroyed was just a great relief. When we were there, we were very apprehensive about it, but when it actually started getting knocked down, we had a few friends there. Do you know, it was almost like a party atmosphere. I know it's a strange thing to see, to say, like, but the relief of actually seeing that place get knocked flat to the floor
was
a relief. And it actually felt lighter and a lot better for that.
Yeah, it has helped a lot having that house destroyed, because every time you went past that road, you always turned your head to that house. I mean, you try not to, but automatically your head just turns. Now we go past and our heads don't turn because you've got nothing there. You haven't got the nightmare or the house out of hell there. It's all gone.
People listening and people like myself, anyone who's... You don't have to be a parent to understand the horror of this story, but how are you both doing? It's not that long ago since this all happened, three years less, and people want to know today, how are you both?
I'm still struggling.
Yeah.
We have counselling. I take it each day at a time. Sometimes I have good days. Maybe I have a good week sometimes, and others, as you can see in my documentary, I have bad days, and I really struggle.
I keep myself very busy. I'm always doing something, like, but I don't like to sit down and contemplate. I like to move forward and do things, but you can't always do things. So if I find I got time to myself, I struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot better. And just lately, this last 4 months, Coral's, I've seen a vast improvement in Coral.
Good. Well, I used to cook cakes with the kids and all sorts. And some photos that people have seen with April and my other children, I like making cakes and doing stuff, but he took that all away from me. It's like when he killed April, he just sort of squashed what I did with the other kids as well, and I just stopped doing everything. But I've started now coming back slowly, doing bits and more with the kids and feeling like a proper mum again.
It's a difficult story, to say the very least. But listen, on behalf of all the people listening in this morning and ourselves as a programme, we can only wish you good Godspeed and look after yourselves and your gorgeous children. And thank you so much for your heartbreakingly honest take on your story this morning. We wish you both, all four of you, in fact, the very best going into the future. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
That's Carl and Paul Jones there. The book is called April. It's a mother and father's heartbreaking story, as they say, of the daughter they loved and lost. Difficult read, to be honest with you, but a couple who are so strong. I don't use the word often because I think it's too overused, but brave and exceptional under the circumstances.